Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 9th on the West Coast, now February the 10th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. We appreciate your interest in the show and your interest in helping us spread the word of truth. Tonight, there are many, many things that I think my guest and I are going to be talking about. Nothing in particular, but before we bring him on, I thought I'd share something a little different with you tonight in terms of a musical performance. This is actually a duet featuring two guitarists, the late Lenny Bro and Chet Atkins. And if you know anything about guitars, you certainly know who these gentlemen are. And I thought it would be just nice to listen to something that comes from the heart. And this is Taking a Chance on Love, Lenny Bro and Chet Atkins from their Standard Brands recording.
Thank you.
Chet Atkins. In case you're wondering which gentleman was playing which part, if you're listening in stereo and your speakers are hooked up properly or your headphones are on straight, the left speaker, in other words, on your left, then Lenny Bro is the one playing on the left side and, of course, Chet Atkins on the right. In addition, you can identify Lenny Bro's playing when you hear a bass line, chords, and melody all going on at the same time. He was a phenomenal guitarist. And I take particular delight in knowing that this went throughout the galaxy as well as into your home. Tonight's guest has been waiting patiently in the background. He himself plays the guitar, so I'm interested in what he thought of this performance. He is an environmental scientist, an historian, an herbalist, and also a musician, as I just mentioned, my good friend, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Don. Thanks. Great to be back.
Well, I have to ask you that $64,000 question. What did you think of that performance?
I thought it was okay.
You thought it was okay.
No, those guys are great, Don, of course. And it's always a treat to listen to those guys. A lot of talent, very musical. And so it's always a treat. Thanks.
Well, you can tell that they love, well, Lenny loved music, of course, his craft. He's from Canada. Or was from Canada, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But he spent his latter years in the United States, and as happens to so many celebrities in Los Angeles, his demise was way, way too soon. He actually drowned in a swimming pool at his apartment.
That's hard to believe.
I had followed his music for a number of years, and I'd seen him play live. He's just unbelievable to watch how he played
the thing. Yes, there's some YouTube video material available with his performances. Yeah, guy was excellent. That's
and of course, Chet Atkins is a master himself, and they designed guitars after him, or he participated in that as well.
Mm.
So. Music and love, you know, the two go hand in hand very naturally, don't they? Music.
Most definitely, Don. You can't separate the two. And, you know, and when you say with love, and of course there's the romantic love and music, of course, I mean, everyone has their favorite songs. And, but then you have music with love as far as a force and a power of harmonization, and that is universal as well. And you, and as they say, the old saying, music tames the savage beast. And I find that all animals and the birds, everybody loves really nice music. I don't play any garbage. Even the garden and the plants, I mean, they all respond in an incredible way to beautiful music. And during the summertime, I do play a lot of classical material as well as some nice modern stuff too, but it's all very, very soothing as far as not noisy or irritating in any way, no matter what the volume is. It's always soothing on the system, pleasant to hear, and even though it could be upbeat, and the plants, everything responds, the birds, everything responds, but the animals, growing up with dogs and stuff, they always love to sit around my feet at the piano all the time, and no matter what the mood was, as soon as they heard some music, they came right over, they laid down, and you could see that they really enjoyed it as well, and it was truly calming, and as an effect. So, you know, music is key to happiness, and that's why it'd be great if everybody did study music and learn to play instruments. And because once you do, as we all know, you're never happy unless you're playing every so often, because it's so integral for the emotional release of positive vibrations. Now, of course, you'll have musicians that are into just the negative stuff, even though they may think it's positive, just loud, noisy, over-amplified, and ultimately irritating as an effect. And yet they find it soothing as well when they play it to themselves. And so music is, it's really great. It's integral in nature. And as I mentioned in the past, it's fundamental to the composition of matter. And it's underlying, it's the underlying force behind everything in the Bible. In the beginning was the Word. The Word represents sound. And so, of course, God creates with sound and light. And so this sound is musical in its form and nature at the atomic level as well. And I've been fortunate to hear that. It's an incredible musical display of incredible sounds, and I heard orchestration. It's called the Music of the Spheres in the old days.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
And it's truly a musical composition that's constantly changing, and it's very classical in nature as far as an orchestra sound. But there's the wind and the waves and birds and the birds singing. I could hear in some way I could even actually hear, like, when at nighttime on a summer night, you'll hear crickets chirping away, or actually rubbing their legs, making that sound. And actually you could actually sense that was in there too, even though it wasn't so distinct as that particular sound, where the waves were clearly distinct waves. And same with the birds. Like, you could hear, like, birds singing along with it, but not so much exactly the way you would hear birds outside in the natural realm. And yet when you heard this musical piece, you could hear that those sounds were integrated in this composition nonetheless. And so it's very ethereal, very powerful on its effects. And from my personal experience, it's true. It's a fundamental component to nature, matter at the fundamental level.
Mm-hmm. I agree. My perception has always been that, let's say, where the source is, where life and existence begins, and that could be just a tiny little speck of a dot, of infinitesimal size, and yet it expands outward throughout the universe. And I think what happens in some realities, like here on planet Earth, would be a good example. It's in a very pure state, and as its intention is imposed upon everything that exists in the universe basically resonates to those frequencies. And that establishes the order. This could be mathematically described as well, even from a musical context. And as these vibrations reach the earth, and man has his hands and mind on the vibrations, filtering out certain components, maybe adding others, It takes on a different character. Now, it might be forced to operate by universal law, but I think what's happened is a lot of the music that is created today does not fit the universal characteristics of music. It's actually moving in a different direction. The vibrations are much more basic in quality, or coarse or raw in quality, not refined. And as a result, it plays upon certain aspects of our energy field. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, Don.
Consciousness, yes. or the stifling of consciousness.
Yes, and that definitely pertains to the modern music, really. It's only in our time frame that music has devolved to become that way and have that type of effect. The more you go back in time, especially all the way back to the Renaissance period and then forward through the great classical era into the Romantic period, the music was phenomenal. Just phenomenal. And that's why it's so alive to this day.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love classical music myself. And you know, I've considered playing it, but some of the pieces I would play are 20 minutes long. And I'd have to change the format of the show. Well, we're now going to be listening to George Zell and the Cleveland Orchestra's interpretation of Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, known as the Symphony Pathétique.
Yes, and that's right. That's the beauty
a beautiful piece of music, but sure. It doesn't lend itself to talk radios.
No, because it requires concentration. That's the beauty of going to a great concerts like that with the big orchestras, because you're going to be totally mesmerized. You're going to be enthralled. You're going to be carried away.
You're going to be drenched in those frequencies.
Yes, you're going to be carried away.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be sitting in that seat without ever really thinking about being in that chair, because you'll be so wrapped up in the beautiful work of the orchestra with all the great sounds. And that's just how it is. It's beautiful stuff, and everyone should surround themselves with it. There's so much out there that from great composers that it's a lifetime to study it all and to listen to it over and over, to really absorb it all. You never get tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And music, beautiful thing. That's what makes this world. Of course, because it's a God feature. Mm-hmm. It's an attribute of God. God himself, the good angels, music is everything to them. And it's all through nature, as we were just saying. And so it's integral for having an abundant life. There's no getting around it. Quality music.
Now, in a society where we have been trained and indoctrinated into this idol worship system, I'm sure there are some listeners out there, and you know, don't be offended, folks. This is just an observation that I routinely make. If I were to say, well, this is Lenny Bro and Chet Atkins playing a duet, okay, and it's an old standard, okay? There are a lot of people, what about Eric Clapton? Well, if I would have said Eric Clapton was playing that, then it would have been okay, you see? Or Frank Zappa, or any number of well-known rock guitarists or heavy metal guitarists. All I have to do is mention the name that clicks with those people, and instantly, this takes on a whole new meaning, you see. But the truth is, it's Lenny Bro and Chet Atkins. And they are playing things on the guitar that few people in the world can do. So,
yes, that's
so,
right.
So there's a mastery at work here. Even if it's not your favorite kind of music, if you appreciate what it takes to communicate music to people, other people's compositions, as well as one's own original compositions, if you really seek to understand the music, you can get something out of it that adds meaning to your life, then that's fine. We're not judging your tastes in music. But then again, you know, we share this as information, as a different point of view of what's out there in the world. Because
we're just creatures of habit. We're used to what we're used to. We get conditioned as soon as we're born. And, you know, Don, growing up, we grew up with the rock and roll era. You were right in the thick of it. And so it's natural for all of us to immediately respond to such sounds, because that's what we're so really intimate with, because that's what we've been bombarded with our whole lives. However, like I noticed classical when I was just getting around 18, 19, 20 years old, when all of a sudden it's like, wow, whoa, that is gorgeous. Who is that? And next thing I know, I'm drawn into the classical sounds, because as we mature, then we're going to recognize other creative geniuses that were way before us. And even though we couldn't relate to it in our youth because we didn't hear it on the radio stations we were listening to, everything was loud and had a driving beat to it for the most part. And so it was foreign and you couldn't relate to it. But as we all get older, everybody will come to terms with recognizing how beautiful the real classical stuff is. And whenever I'm playing a lot of that kind of material in my house and I have friends or somebody coming by, and I'll say, geez, Mike, who's that? That's great. That's beautiful. I've had years over the years, like I remember one time at a local health store years ago, a girl working there, young girl, and as it turns out, we were talking music, and I turned her on to Joaquin Rodrigo's Concierto de Aranjuez, which is it's just stunning, right, Don? And I gave her a copy of it, and within 2 weeks, when I was talking with her again, she said it saved her life. As it turned out, she was at that time so depressed, she was contemplating suicide, which I didn't have no idea about until afterwards. And she said, Michael, that music saved my life. She says, because she was very happy when I ran into her and she was thanking me for what I did. And then I realized when she told me that, she was actually so depressed that she was contemplating suicide, a young girl. And so sad to even hear that. But that music turned her right around. It brought about this positive perspective at a spiritual level. And it just brought her out of that situation back into a nice place emotionally and mentally. And that's done. The power of music, good music. That's what it does. It builds us up, and therefore it builds up civilization. And that's why we need to hear just always beautiful music, even when it's modern stuff. It's just got to be beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it will always have a positive creative effect on everything that comes in contact with it.
Yes, that's so true. I'm reminded while you were talking, I was thinking of Frank Zappa's interpretation of a well-known pop artist, another guitarist, Carlos Santana. Mm-hmm. And Frank composed a piece called Variations on the Carlos Santana Secret Chord Progression. and of course it was a pun, but it was, you know, the bum 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 over and over.
Sure.
So there are different ways of approaching another's music, and I guess he decided, well, I'm going to create a song around something that made Carlos Santana famous. So in a way, he's complimenting him too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you see, Don,
the title.
Yeah, you know, it's not as sophisticated and complicated like Zappa's works in most respects. But I mean, at the same time, Santana, I mean, what music did he do that wasn't appealing? You know, even though some of it could be, you know, it's fundamental, basic in its approach, its chording or whatever, but nonetheless, usually great rhythms, nice, excellent melodies most of the time, beautiful guitar work, and that's why Santana is still popular to this day. And it doesn't have to be sophisticated, complex material to be great, not at all. It just has to be beautiful. That's all that requires. The ultimate a net result is it has to be, at least to me, it has to be beautiful. And it will always be appreciated all the time, no matter what kind of background the individuals may have. When they hear it, they'll always recognize it for like, wow, that's really nice.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they always say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And I guess in music, it would be the ear of the beholder or the listener. So, you know, sure. It's a subjective thing. You know, Frank Zappa once said, you might be the lousiest guitar player in the world compared to other established guitarists, but all that really matters is your own opinion about yourself. Doesn't matter what anyone else says.
That's all true, and it can be subjective, but at the same time, Don, I know when I play every time, for example, when I played something like Antonio Lauro's Venezuelan Waltz number 3, mm-hmm. which is a real little classic number, and on the Spanish guitar. And everybody is like, wow, that's amazing. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And that's how it is all the time. It's not, nobody's going to deny it, no matter if they're just into a particular genre. When they hear really beautiful stuff, it always makes them stop and say, wow, that's just beautiful. Nobody can deny it once they hear it. It's not all that subjective, really. What is more subjective is when you listen to things that don't come off immediately as, wow, that's really beautiful. You got to listen to it more and say, okay. Like some parts of the song, I say, yeah, that's nice. Some parts I say, well, I would have done a little different, but that would be all subjective. But all in all, when you hear the real, they're just perfect pieces and perfect, not so much because the techniques are so advanced, but just the overall sound itself, the musical piece itself, it's beautiful. And that's the only word that you can really, everyone will really just use. They'll go right to, that is beautiful. And that's really, to me, what music should be always about, whatever the genre is. It should always be just, all in all, the listener should always say, that is beautiful. And then music is where it should be, like everything, striving for the ultimate perfection. And the masters from the 1800s, early 1900s, they covered it all. You study those guys and you'll be able to do anything because they covered it all with techniques, styles, and the intimacy of the instrument. You're going to be so intimate with that instrument that all these other styles of modern stuff, I mean, it's there's nothing to it, really. You know, like with the Super Bowl, I was watching a little bit just to see if I could get some Homeland Insecurity shots to see if the SS were goose-stepping during halftime or anything. And they had the Black Eyed Peas as their entertainment. And I got to say, I was so disappointed. Because I'm like, yeah, this is not quality music. It's lame. Now, this is my opinion, so for whatever it's worth. But I'm like saying to myself, this is just not, you know, we are not up to the standards at all of our previous generations. If they say that is really true at music entertainment, then no wonder we're hurting.
Yeah, it doesn't have to have any aesthetic quality to it. It's all the spectacle of it,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a sight thing, you know, special.
Yeah, it's just visual, right?
Yes, you brought something to mind, and I'm maybe this is going to be the guitar show, but I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with a guitarist by the name of Lee Ritenour. But he's known as a session player in Los Angeles for many, many years. He's worked with a lot of famous artists, and because he's a master of the guitar. And I want to play a song that he wrote called Malibu. Imagine you're lying on the beach taking in the music of the scenery. Malibu and Lee Ritenour. Mm-hmm.
see it through. Ooh, I love you. There's no place I could ever find that gives me such peace of mind and makes me easy. Touches me with you quite like you do. How I love you. Yes, I do.
It's interesting, Michael. Lee Ritenour composed a piece of music that described Malibu as a woman. Mm-hmm. And interesting. And it's obvious that the colors in that song, to me, in my opinion, the colors reflect what he saw, what he was feeling, what he was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Sung sure, by I can
Phil,
hear it.
Phil Perry, by the way, was the Lisa.
I was going to ask you. Yeah, he nice sound, very nice sound, and the voice reminded me. It was reminiscent of surprisingly to me. It made me think immediately of Deep Purple when Tommy Bolin played with him on like the album. I think it was "Come Taste the Wine," and the voice on those on that track, the vocal was kind of similar to some of the tracks on that particular album. But a very nice sound. Yeah, you could hear Lee capturing the beach atmosphere in that piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I thought I'd share that. We were moving in that direction conversationally. So here we are talking about music and the impact it has on people. And it can have a negative impact, but it would sort of defile this music to go to take the conversation in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, classical music is an acquired taste. I studied classical music on the trumpet, and it branched to other instruments that I play as well. And it has great value in acquiring the mastery of any instrument. because the masters wrote that music and were masters on their instruments. Mozart was one such individual.
Oh, yeah, phenomenal.
You know, he could play the piano upside down and backwards.
Yeah, I know.
Of course, they called it a clavier.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, but he was an amazing guy, really incredibly talented.
And, you know, we've touched on this topic, you and I and some other guests, even just briefly, regarding the classical musicians, or I should say the classical composers who came here to change the frequency on the planet. Bach, Johann Sebastian Bach was one such individual. I suppose you could say that about Beethoven and Wagner, although some of their music was used to promote the goose-stepping that you were describing earlier. And Mozart's music was just heavenly.
That's right.
What it still does today, it still has the same impact if you listen to a proper performance of the music with the correct interpretation. And what is that? Well, I think it would have been how Mozart would have had it performed himself. You know, he was quite a remarkable musician, and it's amazing how short the lifespan of many of these classical composers was. Now, I say that not just because there were diseases going around, but I think they were highly stressed because of the prolific amount of work they produced, Mozart being one such example. I think he worked himself to death, and I think there are maybe some aspects of the story of his demise that were never honestly disclosed to us, because I see him as a messenger of God, and I see it was almost demonic how he was taken out, ridiculed, and overworked.
Mm-hmm.
And he met the challenge. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah, he sure did.
He didn't really profit in any great or substantial way financially.
None of the great masters really did, for the most part, in their time. That's just one of the sad parts to it all. But yes, Don, they were great individuals that clearly had some kind of extra blessing. They were here to bring us this beautiful music, and you know, it's we're all fortunate for it, and so there's no other really perspective we could have except that these guys were touching something divine and they were pulling it down, and we have it for posterity here on this planet. And And again, it's the fundamentals. I mean, for Western music, it's all that, all of it's derived from what these guys did over the last few centuries.
Well, now that is also not to imply that there can't be sacred music springing forth out of the hearts of men today. It's just not been a commercial pursuit, you know. Music has been commercialized for many, many years. And here in this country, you can say it goes back to World War I easily, in terms of, you know, the advent of recording machines and the ability to get the music out to people in other mediums besides a live performance. In fact, those things replace the live experience, which is really the most valuable of all the ways you can listen to music.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Like you were pointing out, you can try to duplicate that with a superior audiophile sound system, tower speakers that don't have to be played at high volume levels to produce a very wide frequency response that actually represents true sound coming out with minimum distortion and noise and great placement of all the different instruments. You know, you get into production work and and the art of making the various types of devices that play the media that contain these masterpieces. So you can come close to it with a stereo system or a, you know, a 5 or a 7 speaker Dolby system, surround sound, and all of that. Those are merely effects superimposed over the music. The real value and the real power and the life force is in the music itself.
Oh, absolutely, Don.
In its purest form, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's a shame today that there's not more live entertainment when you go out like it used to be in the old days. It's just not as common anymore, and that also is another symptom of why our culture and society is the way it is today. If you had more good live entertainment, but again, I'm talking about, you know, the kind of music that's always beautiful. I don't want to be going anywhere and hearing stuff that's going to irritate me because I'll be gone instantly. If there were more opportunities for live entertainment, especially with all these great kinds of pieces, then there'd be a big industry. The music business would have a big industry with a lot of students, a lot of teachers, and it's not as common anymore. You see, that's something else really dying off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought of another guitarist. And I've played his music on past shows, especially around Christmas time, because he made a very excellent Christmas album. And though I'm not one to like do cartwheels and backflips when I hear Christmas music, I do appreciate well performed music, especially if it has a profound message in it. And I told the story of guitarist Larry Carlton surviving a murder attempt at his home. One of these John Lennon type experiences when he answered the door and he was stabbed by someone and nearly died. And he came back, and this is a guy, again, he's sort of like you know, what we call triple scale session men that come in. He performed with the Jazz Crusaders for a long time, and everybody was like, what, a white guitar player playing with black musicians? Well, that doesn't happen in jazz. And of course, they developed kind of a real interesting rhythmic, melodic, and harmonic type of jazz that sort of added rock beats and blues grooves and even some funk beats to some very well-written material. It was really a delight to listen to the Jazz Crusaders, who eventually became the Crusaders. And Larry was the first guitarist that they actually used in the group. And when he came back from his near-death experience, he started writing some deep music, and this is a piece I like to play called On Solid Ground. This is when he came back. You know, Michael, it's very apparent to me Larry Carlton recognized where he traveled during this experience he had. And I recognize in the sound the place he visited. I know that that's hard to describe, or that's hard for some people to accept. But if you haven't been there, you don't recognize it. When you have been there, you recognize it immediately. And I think he did an excellent job in his own way of expressing that.
Mm-hmm.
He's also...
I could hear it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, and I could hear it in that piece as well as... There's a spiritual experience under that music, that particular piece.
Mm-hmm. You're breaking up just a little bit, Michael. sort of like machine gun fire.
Oh, how about now?
Now it's clear. Okay. You want to repeat that?
Well, I was just saying that in that particular piece, I understand what you're saying. I could hear some kind of spiritual experience behind that composition.
Yeah, he used a lot of, he sort of used his chords as Picardy thirds, okay? The resolution of a fourth to the major third, you know, is a very happy, thankful type of song. Mm-hmm. And it had a bit of a gospel progression to the chords, original, you know. He is the innovator of the technique of picking the guitar with the volume down and then cranking up the volume with the knob as you're picking. So it basically eliminates the original pick attack. And so instead of having a percussive beginning to the tone, it's sort of wah, 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 you know, instead of dung, dung, dung. Okay, you take that percussion out of there. He became a stylist, and thousands of guitar players have adapted that style to their playing at times. You know, he doesn't overuse it, but it was his signature musically. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you suspect that music, any beautiful music, what is its impact when it's played on the rest of the universe?
Well, essentially, Don, what beautiful music does, like any kind of positive vibration, it's qualifying matter at the essential levels of creation. Okay, the fundamental level of creation. It's matter's being stimulated and qualified by that particular sound. Okay, and that generates harmony among everything from the atomic level, the microscopic level, to the macro level. So again, like in, for example, in chemistry, when we learn about particular molecules, atoms forming molecules, now these atoms come together because of covalent bonding or ionic bonding, and but the real fact of the matter is that the atoms are coming together because of a harmony between them, an attraction principle, and therefore it's a love principle. And
well, then there has to be a communicative interaction going on. In other words, the musician gets inspired by the universe to create or to emit.
Sure.
The frequencies, and the universe takes those in and mirrors back its response. So,
well, yes, you have that. I mean, musicians are always feeding off their emotions musically. So you have blues because those particular musicians felt the blues emotionally, you see. Mm-hmm. And
or a predominance of the color blue in their aura, maybe.
Well, the blues, I don't get blue color. That is my color, Donna. I don't see that beautiful color, at least the royal blue, coming out of blues. No, it's,
no, I wouldn't say it's a royal blue either.
Yeah, it's a sullen blue, if anything, and of a shade of blue. It would be very sullen. to me. I mean, blues just never appealed to me because to me it's a depressed state. And I'm really never in that, even when I am depressed, I'm not for long. And when I am maybe in a depressed state musically and I'm composing, it's still always has a positive effect. The music itself will still come off positive, never negative, which is I'm really fortunate to be able to say that when I'm composing and creating, even when I'm in a, maybe a little bit of a negative state, but that's very rare. But that's what most musicians feed on, is their emotions, and that's how you can get a good feel of a musician, what they're like personality-wise, by when you hear their music. But as far as creation in nature, okay, it's going to stimulate harmonies and expand the love power principle further through all creation, through matter. See, at the atomic level, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then it manifests outwardly into the macro world as it's already existing at the fundamental micro level, at the atomic level. And that's what music does. And it's old. That's an old science. It's well known. It's been used for a technique for hypnotizing certain rhythms and stuff to generate a trance-like state. And so it's well known that sound vibrations have a major influence on everything.
Mm-hmm. That's done with drumming a lot. And the Beijing Olympics is a perfect example of how there was ritual drumming going on that really is speaking a language of its own, understood by those who created it, but not necessarily by those who listen to it.
Yes. Yes. They understand exactly what those rhythm patterns and the vibration are going to cause as an effect upon their subjects. And also, you know, think of those... in the Orient, where like you would have the Indian type guy sitting down with his little flute, bringing a snake out of the basket and having it tamed. And so, yeah, the
snake
music
charmers,
is,
they call those.
There you go. Snake charmers. That's right. And so there again, music clearly very powerful influence on everything.
Now, imagine then that if positive music, music of a high spiritual order or high frequency, not necessarily in pitch, but in its purity and its resonance or its harmonics in relation to the rest of the universe, likewise, when one creates distortion or a cacophony of sound that is persistent, not maybe used as dramatic effect, but consistent throughout a song or a performance, then there has to be an adverse reaction going on universally as well. Wouldn't that be the natural outcome of a performance of distortion?
Yes, well, I mean, again, Don, if you're generating vibrations that are going to be distortive, then that's the result we're going to get. And obviously, a lot of the music today has a distortion effect on everything. And that's why we're seeing distortion throughout our society.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the reason. It's part of one of the essential reasons. It's not the only reason.
Yeah.
But it's there because it's reinforcing the other causes of distortion, and they're just hammering it home, and they being the controllers who clearly know how to tear apart a culture and a people by making sure their environment consists of nothing but distortions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, sure, absolutely, that's just how it is.
And
there's always a reaction to every impulse. There will be a reaction to it, whether favorable or unfavorable.
Yeah. distortion on a guitar used in the context of a rock band, say, for instance, has a certain pleasing sound or enables the guitarist to play the instrument a little bit differently because it has a tendency to lengthen the overall tone after the instrument, a string is plucked, let's say, with a pick. At that point, the tone is able to sustain a certain intensity. So there can be a pleasing quality to a distortion of that type, but certain types of distortion have to mirror back chaotically as they are created, because if you can see what a distorted frequency looks like on an oscilloscope, you would say, wow, that looks kind of nasty. And it has its counterpoint or its counterpart when it's reflected back to one. It's just like when one prays or when one communicates with nature. If you can communicate something pure and of a high quality or a high frequency, then its result is going to be the same. It produces what we call miracles. And I think in another sense, if we're sort of chaotic about how we do that, we reap chaos from it. It may not be intended, but our ignorance of what these frequencies can do is not an excuse for ignoring the impact that it has. You know, you can send people to war with march music, and they sort of are in a particular mood, in a particular trance. They may feel patriotic because they've been taught that that's patriotic music, and it might be in a sense, but even though it's music, it's leading one to do the probably the biggest crime that can be committed on the.
Well, it's not the music so much, Don. There, you see, the music is that particular, like, patriotic kind of music. You know, Star Spangled Banner, or the tunes that they came up with, like Cohen for World War One, Cohen did it for World War One, like over there. You know, that was all. Now, the music itself wasn't the cause of.
No, I'm not saying it is, but it leads one into a false sense of, you got to go get them, you know.
Well, it doesn't lead to a false sense. What it does is it builds us up emotionally, okay? It charges us emotionally, like, like a cheerleader when you're in a game. The cheerleaders come out to give you the reinforcement that we're with you. We can do it, okay? And that's what that kind of marching music is going to do emotionally. And then what they do is then the controllers, the scumbags like the Rockefellers that control the media, then they, through their media, start hyping up, you know, how we got to get involved. We got to go help them. This has to be a war to end all wars and all that happy horse crap. Mm-hmm. And that's how they take advantage of what the music is doing. The music is encouraging. It's making us feel confident and strong. It's bolstering in its effect. And then they exploit it by saying, yeah, no, come on, let's go get them.
Yeah, you know, you've got like the John Philip Sousa Stars and Stripes Forever, you know. Okay, it's like real festive. And then, you know, the trio, which is the last part of the piece. Da, 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 da. Okay, they use that for the 4th of July. Okay, Stars mm-hmm. and Stripes Forever. I mean, there is a message there. It's a great piece of music. Don't get
it's
me
great.
Wrong.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good.
But it's used to justify, at least in the psyches of the participants, the cause of war.
Whether. Yeah, but Don, this is what people, now the music itself is not doing that. It's how it's played upon once they stir up the emotions. Then the controllers step in instead of saying, you know, the United States could be so great if we learn to be more productive and we learn to be more virtuous and we gotta stay away from all the vices. No, they don't. They don't use that approach when they build up everybody with the emotionally with that kind of music, the marching music.
I know that, but
that's right. So it's not the music itself. The music is creating the emotions for somebody to be charged up.
Oh, I understand that. I don't. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
The music's being used for a purpose. For which it may not have originally been created.
Absolutely. I mean, the music itself is to build up and give a sense of a charge and a sense of purpose to the people, the country that it's intended for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it's on how it's spun by the controllers. How they play on those emotions,
of course,
to exploit it for their own agenda.
That's determining its use.
Yep, that's right, and that's what people have to watch out for. You know, same like with what Wagner. You know, I mean, when I listen to Ride of the Valkyries and his other pieces, and I say, yeah, the guy was talented, he was great. Now, was he militaristic? No, but the Nazis sure made it militaristic. You know, the Nazis came in and said, Hitler in particular said, you know, I can see military advancement with that music, you see. But I don't think Wagner himself intended that. He was just into the knights and the Holy Grail for the most part. That's, as far as I can tell, everything about Wagner, he was totally wrapped up in that. And his music was relating to all of that. And the supernatural realms, he was wrapped up in that. And the Nazis exploited his music for militaristic purposes because emotionally it builds you up. It makes you feel charged. And then they exploited it for negative purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it took on a significant metaphysical importance for the cause.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, the music is very charging. It's especially the Ride of the Valkyries. It's definitely a great piece that you can sense a lot of dynamics, emotional energies coming in. It's very, very powerful. But see, like with me, when I hear that kind of stuff, I use that power just spiritually. You know, I visualize with it. And I stimulate my mind through visualization with that, and I create positive concepts, images. Because remember, as a man thinketh, so he becometh. That's the beauty of music. I love to listen to the beautiful stuff because it stimulates me to think beautifully, you see? And then I can generate beautiful concepts, beautiful visualizations, imagery, which then, because like attracts like, that's how things work. And then I'm creating those thoughts, being stimulated by that beautiful music. I create those thoughts, and then those thoughts eventually materialize, and they come to me because I'm pulling it to me. And that's how I love to use music. When I'm just during the summertime, if I have an opportunity to be finding that I got some time, I can lounge around and soak up the sun and swim all day. And I'll be listening to beautiful music and just visualizing away as I'm soaking in that sun and always using the mind very creatively with music. I thrive on beautiful music because it helps stimulate my mind in a very positive, creative way as it's supposed to. And that's a technique that should be taught more and more so that people can really benefit from what beautiful music will do. And, you know, no matter what kind of genre it is, if it's beautiful and it's you can feel a positive stimulation out of it, then channel it mentally and visualize it. Visualize you're healthy, you're happy, you're prosperous, you're anything beautiful and anything good. You use your mind and create all that. And that's why music is so key. Because it helps us get there real fast when it's beautiful music. And then, of course, the non-beautiful music the ugly music will have this exact opposite effect. And it will help cause people to think destructively, to think negatively all the time.
Yeah, you know, at the top of the show, Michael, you mentioned animals. And I know firsthand that animals respond very positively to music, and certain kinds of music can get them very upset. And they don't, it doesn't have to be loud per se. It's a frequency thing with them, and certainly harmonics play a major role because their hearing range goes way beyond that of the average human. Dogs and cats can hear, especially dogs, their hearing is off the charts. They can hear over two, well, I should say over an octave above what we measure sibilance at in mastering. So, you know, we're talking about anywhere in the range of 20 to 25,000 hertz for sibilance to add sort of a crispness to the consonants in a speaking voice or in some of the percussion instruments, the zing that you get in a cymbal or the ping of the bell of a cymbal being played with a stick or the picking action on the guitar. Those real high frequencies can sound much brighter when you add more sibilance to that. Now, that's at least an octave below what most dogs can hear. So imagine what's going on in the animal world and how we affect nature. If we look at nature and where it's going, even, you know, discounting what they're doing to it industrially, we would have to say that dissonant music or music of a negative with negative intention or being used for negative purposes has an impact on nature. It has to, because nature's operating under all the laws of the universe.
Yeah, Don, absolutely. I mean, all in all, what I would say is that such music like that just falls into the category of noise, just like if it was cars screeching up the road and or some kind of, you know, or like 4th of July when there's all kinds of fireworks going on, dogs usually go crazy and, you know, run and try to hide.
And small birds die from heart attacks usually.
See that? Yeah, there you go. And so all of that falls into the category of noise and it's very destructive. No question. It's just that's how it is. It's very destructive. And but the beautiful music, I mean, even this time of year, which is really amazing when it's so cold out for the last 2 months when we've had such a hard winter of just, you know, nasty cold, unbearable cold to be outside all day and especially all night.
Today is a day such as that, you know, minus 10 degrees. And
Right. And yet, you know, when I got some friends over, whatever, outside, and I say, we're inside, and I can hear the birds singing up a storm. So I'll say, listen to that. You know, I'll have the back door open and say, listen to that. Now, it's freezing cold out, and yet these guys are singing up a storm. And you'd think they'd be all miserable and, you know, trying to figure a way to stay warm. But, you know, I feed them good, and therefore they are able to keep generating heat, and they stay warm on their own, even though they're out in the middle of it all with no protection other than their own feathers and their own body heat they're able to generate. And they're singing all day long. And so this is how it is when we control our environment and we make sure that it's as harmonious as we can achieve it to be. So in that way, everything in that space is enjoying that harmony. And that's what we have to do as individuals, is control our own space the best we can, and don't let anything into your space that's going to disrupt that harmonious environment that you've created. And you'll see it just affect everything all the time. When people come around all the time, they're always complimenting how they're stunned that everything is just seems like a Garden of Eden, especially in the summertime. And all I do is play beautiful music all the time. Now, right now, I've got a couple cats hanging out here. Last week when I was on, you heard Panther. Now I got this other one, Killer. And now Killer took a few years for me to finally get him where he doesn't really go around killing the birds, at least not while I'm around. But I've got also a few pigeons in the house that I've taken in for just to work with. And they're totally fine. But I just picked them up outside while I was feeding them, brought them in. And now these pigeons don't freak out with these cats. The pigeons are not in cages. They don't freak out with these two cats when they're walking around. And at the same time, the cats do not freak out and go after the birds. And it's, I mean, what is that? That's
harmony.
That's supernatural activity.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, Don. And what I do all the time is I'm making sure that I'm playing beautiful music. I'm turning the, in particular, these pigeons onto it and giving them some culture. And so I got beautiful music playing all the time. It affects the cats. And then I work with them. I talk with the birds. I talk with the cats. They're all very intelligent. They understand exactly what I'm saying. And I have that kind of control. The cats are behaved. They don't go after the birds. All the cats want to do is really hang around with me and feed off my vibration. They want a lot of petting, a lot of TLC, and I give them that. And I feed them well, and they know that, and they stay very healthy. And so they're content. And therefore, when I tell them, don't bother the birds, I like the birds too, they don't bother the birds. And then when I'm working with the birds, at least these pigeons, I make it clear they can see that I have control over these cats. And so the pigeons really don't freak out when the cats are around. Everything is calm. And that's how it should be for all of us. Controlling our own space, our own environment, and making sure that only positive, harmonious sounds are dominant in that space all the time. Sometimes you can't control it. A car goes by and they're blasting some noise, or they're screeching tires, or there's a jackhammer breaking up a road, or whatever the case may be. But aside from that, you control your own space, especially within your home. And what a world of difference it makes.
Jackhammer, where I live, they haven't seen one of those yet. The cold patching is what they understand. Take a shovel and throw, like you're scattering bird seed, you know, throw mm-hmm. the tar and try to hit the hole in the road. Well, the reason I brought up this thing about animals and how they get along, how they like music, and, you know, if the music is the right kind of music, it's going to flow with nature. It's going to be easy for them to connect with it. Likewise, music can scare them. It can cause them to suffer. It could cause them to become sick, as well as plants. Jim Murray actually described an experiment that was done where a man was standing in a line of people who were passing by a table with let's say plant arrangements. And as the people walked by, they looked at each plant and they were measuring the consciousness of these plants. Mm-hmm. And there was an individual that began hacking at one of the plants and killed it, cut it up to shreds. And the other plants in the room registered an emotional
fear.
Response.
That's right.
Oh,
that's
yes,
right.
Yes.
That's
they right. became very wary of this person's energy. And it wasn't until a month or two later, I don't recall the exact amount of time, but this man just walked into the room and the plants began freaking out again.
There you go.
You see?
Yes.
So look at what we're doing to the earth when we're negligent or ignorant of what we're really doing when we're putting frequencies out in all the different ways, not to mention the electromagnetic bombardment of all the different handheld devices that people are using now.
And at the most fundamental, Don, is the thought wave patterns that we generate. That's the most fundamental. Like the plants sensed soon this guy walked back in the room, they picked up on his thought waves immediately. And that's why... You know, like with, again, just for me personally, I mean, my whole life I've had animals all the time. They come up to me, birds I've discussed in the past, they come right up to me, eat out of my hand. And people are always amazed. But I say, look, you know, there's nothing amazing about this. They all know I'm cool. They all know when they see me, I'm on their side. I'll go out of my way for them. If they need something, sure, I'll do my best to accommodate them. And they know that they're safe with me, that I'm definitely not going to be harming them in any way, that just the opposite, that they feel safe. They know there's safety around me. And that's what, unfortunately, a lot of people just miss as they live their lives. They don't realize that that's, you know, everything's alive. And all these foolish people thinking animals don't have souls or plants don't have feelings. It's just so sad. I mean, come on, get out in nature and you tell me mingle with nature for a while. And you tell me these animals don't have some kind of souls. That plants don't respond to your emotions, your feelings, and your thoughts. Of course, they all do.
Everything operates on a frequency, you know.
Yes, Don. Yes, absolutely. Energy itself has a frequency to it, and so everything has a vibration and therefore a frequency. Absolutely, but it's not just the vibration and the frequency; it's the intent that's also combined with that vibration and frequency. That's what all life forms are able to sense.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've often contemplated what the frequency of fear is. And I came to the conclusion that there was not any one given frequency
that most
accurately represented, but it was the accumulated distortion and the resulting chaos.
Exactly.
Of that distortion.
That's exactly
that
right.
Fear.
That's correct. That would be the musicality of fear. It's a bunch of distorted frequencies that will have a, you know, like shrieking kind of effect in tone. Or it could be very heavy and morbid in tone.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can produce fear with an explosive sound, and one of the most explosive sounds is a large percussion instrument known as a drum, a bass drum, or a timpani. When it's played and you are not prepared for it to start playing,
you can jump right out of your skin.
Yes, it can have a startling effect because of the intensity of standing waves. You see. Today's music is super saturated in standing waves and very few of the higher harmonics that are more resonant with our natural makeup, with our DNA, with our cellular structure, and even with our spirit.
Absolutely.
Ultimately, it's all about the spirit, isn't it?
Everything comes back to the spirit. I mean, we always stick to the fundamentals, and at the core fundamentals of life itself, it's spiritual in nature. And we're unfortunately trapped in an imperfect realm, a three-dimensional realm of imperfections. But that's all due to our mortal nature. It's not due to anything else. This world was created by mortals. Adam and Eve became mortals. And that's what the fall is all about. They were immortals in a beautiful paradise. Something happened. And that next thing you know, they're mortals. And with that came all these imperfections. So we have a combination of heaven-like experiences in this world, but there's a lot of hellish experience as well. And it's all due to mankind's mortal nature, the defects that are associated with it. So all in all, it's man behind all the causes of any kind of, wrong, or you know, any kind of imperfections that manifest. Even when you go out in nature and you see the food chain with the predators preying on other animals and birds, that's all from man's activity, the mortal defects. Man was the first to bring all this about way back a long time ago with The Legend of the Fall. And it's up to us to turn it all around. And unfortunately, we don't learn this, that this is what we're really here for. This is what God expects of us. This is what the good Lord Jesus, the Christ, expects of us. We're not to be just waiting for them to return to fix everything. We're here to help fix it. And like when the Lord, in the Lord's Prayer, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. May thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Well, the good Lord wants us to implement that will. It's not going to get here unless we implement it. It's the will exists, the good Lord's will of perfection. It's there, but we're not implementing it. We're not pulling it down. And great men try through music. The great masters have pulled down the good will of the Almighty with his perfection through music. The founding fathers did a great attempt pulling down the will of perfection of the Almighty with the ideals of freedoms for individuals and that no other country really had up to this point in time. And so they were really way ahead in their era for recognizing these perfect ideals of a way to live as a people and a nation where they ruled themselves with a constitutional republic. And they started it off. And of course, again, we have dropped the ball on that one as well, clearly. And, but so it's up to us to try to implement the Father's will all the time. And it's, his will is perfection through everything. No matter what it is, it's going to be perfect. And so if we're, pursuing a particular trade, try to be as perfect as you can. And you'll see that patience becomes the most important component to our ability to pursue perfection in anything we do. And that's where a lot of people have a stumbling block. Over the years, many times I've had people say, "Mike, your patience is amazing. I don't know how you're doing." I say, "Well, look, if you want to do what I'm doing, you're going to need that level of patience because there's no other way to pull it off, like this cat killer." Now, he's called Killer because that's what he's been since he started coming around quite a few years ago. And I would work with him trying to get him to stop killing the birds. He was welcome to hang out. But don't bother the birds because they're my friends too. And but he'd like to do it. That was part of his nature. He had that little wickedness in him where he likes to kill. He wasn't eating, just like to kill him. And so I would scold him one time really good where I didn't threaten him physically at all. But I scolded him. I chewed him out really good, and he wouldn't come back here. I didn't see him for many months, almost a year. It wasn't until one time across the street at a neighbor's where I seen him hanging out there. And I said, "Hey, Killer, this is where you're hanging out?" And all the neighbors were looking like, "Who the heck is Killer, Mike?" And I said, "Oh, that's the cat right there." So everybody's laughing. And he was hanging out near the barbecue. So I told Killer, I said, "Look, Killer, you can come back and hang out over my place anytime. Just don't bother the birds. But you're welcome to come back." And I am not exaggerating. Within 2 days, he was back here. Now, tell me they don't understand what you're saying. And so when he started hanging out here again, I kept working with him. And now I got it to the point where he's really good. He doesn't really bother the birds. I can go outside and I can I'll see him around. And all in all, he's not really stalking like he used to. And he's more just curious about what I'm doing and wants to hang out with me. And so that took a lot of patience to keep working with him instead of just getting fed up and frustrated and shooting at him with a BB gun or throwing snowballs or rocks at him and saying, "Get out of here, you're no good." Instead of taking that course, which is no good at all, it means I'm giving up. It means I'm not that good at what I should be good at, and that is influencing the animals that are around me to also improve their behavior when it comes to the predators. When it comes to the grazers, there's nothing to improve with them. They're so peaceful, it's easy to hang out around them.
Throw rocks at him, he's going to come back sometime and go after the pigeons just to spite you.
To retaliate, yes. Yeah, and Killer, absolutely right, Don. And Killer has that kind of personality trait where when I used to scold him good, he would come back and do it more.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the reflection that I was talking about. Mike, we're about out of time, but I had a couple of requests, one in particular to play a song that I played on last night's show. And I promised I would, because this person caught like the last third and wanted to hear the whole song. It's Natalie Cole, and it's called Angel on My Shoulder. I didn't know better, Michael Anthony. She was singing about the Archangel Michael.
Mm-hmm. It's always great to hear a nice song like that, especially when the lyrics are centered on the angelic activity. And that's who I usually think of in particular, but very nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're out of time. I want to give you a moment for any closing comment you'd like to make. We didn't plan anything for tonight's show, and I thought it was interesting that we listened to a little guitar music tonight.
Yeah, Don, that's really nice. And what I'll do is I'll put together a little bit of material sometime, and when we do this again in this fashion, I'll introduce you and your audience to some other nice guitar music that most people never really come across. That's very stimulating. But Don, it's always a lot of fun, as always, being with you on the show. I just hope that everybody starts to do their best to control their own space, their own environment. When the kids come home and they're playing that kind of noisy stuff, you set the rules straight. You let them know it's not acceptable in your own living space, whether it's home or in the car. And that way you'll see so much what a difference it makes when you start to control your own space. And then, as everybody's controlling their own space and having their environment the way they like it, then when they go out and they hang out at other places, next thing you know, that'll rub off. And other places, whether it's a public place, you go down to the park, you won't hear so much disturbing music that will be usually commonplace today. Everything will become more and more harmonious, because that's how everybody knows. Control your own space, keep it nice and harmonious, and next thing you know, everything becomes nicer. And it's just really, it's that simple. It's hard to believe, but it's so essential for a life of abundance to keep everything in a nice, harmonious state of being all the time.
I get regular reports from the parents of my students that their grades have improved in math and science.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Study a musical instrument.
That's right. It forces creativity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it does. It forces exercising a portion of the brain we normally don't use, and it brings about creativity, which expands into all these other directions. That's right, Don. It's so key. It really is.
And it's really, music allows an expansion of consciousness, the right kind of music.
Sure. Again, that's why I was mentioning I use it for visualizing all the time. Proper visualization is expanding the consciousness. That's really what it's all about. And you're doing it, though, in a creative way, because the thoughts generate and materialize your energy pattern, whatever it is you're visualizing. It will come back to you. And music is great as a stimulus to make all this happen and to make that kind of activity come to fruition. And so it's an essential ingredient for happiness. There's no getting around it. And I know your audience is well aware of that. But now, just be aware of using it to stimulate your mind, your consciousness in this fashion, visualizing what it is you want that's perfect, that you want to bring into your life. Perfect health, perfect abundance, perfect harmony with everything you're living with and around. And lo and behold, it all comes about.
Yes. Well, Michael, that's the end of our show. I want to thank you for your insight and your participation on the show, and encourage folks to go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on sponsors, and then click on Michael Anthony. Check out Michael's private stock, his herbs. You won't be sorry if you do. I can tell you that. Plenty of testimonials in Michael's favor. Michael, I also want to remind you and the listeners that you'll be back with us again on Tuesday the 22nd. That's Deuce's Wild Day.
That's a good day.
We've got 5 twos out of that date. And 5 times 2 is 10, and 10 is perfection. And that's the Lord's number. So that should be an interesting show that evening, don't you think?
Don, I hope it is. And as always, I hope it's always interesting when I join you. I'll do my best, but I'll be looking forward to that very much. Thank you.
All right, folks.
Thanks for that plug.
Okay. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our guest, Michael Anthony. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints. Over at BBS Radio, we want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night for another great show. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.